everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm Jace. This is a giant, supersized episode covering a lot of San Diego Comic-Con, probably our most in-depth episode. I'm going to be talking a lot about the comic news that has come out of San Diego Comic-Con, and we're also going to talk about DC Rebirth number 8. So it's a big episode. I will have more episodes this week with creator interviews starting to roll out that I did on the show floor. I realize I should have probably had some of these creator interviews out already, but coming back to real life with the day job, and you know, I love going to San Diego every year. It's amazing. There's no other convention and experience that's like it, but it does create a lot of work for me, and since I pretty much do this on my own, and I do have to do the day job to pay the bills, it makes for a lot of work once I get back from a supposed vacation. So I'm certainly not complaining. Like I said, I love San Diego and I love doing the podcast. Bear with me, be patient. Just a few other items. I did get to speak with Gerard Way at the convention about his new DC Young Animal imprint, and I was able to get some ash cans. I'm going to be giving those away. Stay tuned for details on that at the end of the episode. Also, a lot of emails to send out, a lot of contacts to touch base with who are planning on coming on the show at a later date. So, you know, make sure you're following us on Twitter, following us on Facebook, so you'll know when all those episodes come out. I'm trying to think of some other details that I should mention to you guys. I guess I should mention that I will be doing other episodes later this week, perhaps even into next week, about the movie and TV news that has come out from San Diego. Just with the comic news itself, I feel this episode's going to be very long, and I'm not going to get too in-depth into my thoughts on the news. I'm kind of just going to read the headlines, and if there's anything that you want to know more about, I encourage you to go to the show notes. There's going to be links. Sometimes these bits of news have multiple links to multiple articles talking about the news. So if there's something in particular you're interested in, I encourage you to do that, or just Google it, and I'm sure you can find the information that way. I should say that I got a lot of news from CBR and Bleeding Cool, as always. And there's other IGN and Deadspin and all kinds of other places that I pulled this news from. San Diego's kind of strange in that it's so big and there's so many people. You can kind of only focus on what you're doing and what you're going for and what your priorities are. And you don't really hear all the news because it's so big, and you can't go to every panel and cover everything. And so it's kind of strange. You come back home, and then you, even though you were there, you have to get caught up on all the announcements. So, without further ado,
we're sitting on top of the story of the century here.
So, the first link in the show notes is the Eisner Award winners. I kind of have mixed feelings about the Eisners. Certainly, they do hold some cachet in the industry. You know, kind of like when you win an Academy Award, you'll forever be referred to after that as Academy Award winner so-and-so. Kind of the same way with the Eisners. But that being said, the people that vote on them sometimes tend to overlook the more mainstream content. And that's not to say that the winners aren't deserving. But if you want to see a full list of the winners, you can go and check out the link in the show notes. Starting with Marvel, Deadpool's back in the Venom costume soon, and we're also going to see some Shakespearean variants rolling out this fall. There's going to be an oversized special, $9.99 for just a regular issue of the comic. Clearly, it's going to be oversized. I'm not a big fan of a regular comic being like $9.99. That seems excessive to me. If you want to do that, that's fine. Put it out as a special, but don't put it out as a regular issue of the series, because then people that want to have a full run, you know, maybe they don't want to pay that. So I find that to be a bit ridiculous. Venom, or Deadpool rather, in the Venom costume is an interesting and funny idea. That's spinning out of the series, the Secret Wars limited series, Deadpool's Secret Wars, or whatever it was. So I'm sure fans of Deadpool probably know more about that than I do. You can check out the links in the show notes. Marvel had a Death of X panel. There's two links in the show notes talking about this. Wasn't a lot of new news. They kind of confirmed what we already knew, in that it's going to cover that 8-month gap between the end of Secret Wars and when the all-new Marvel Now launched. So check out those two articles for details, not new details, but you can kind of refresh your memory if you'd like. Also, Marvel announced their variant cover theme for October is Champions. That's a new series they're pushing this fall with some of the younger heroes, so expect them to show up on the covers of your variants. I've seen, and in the articles you'll see, there's a few examples of the covers. They look pretty good. Here's another item that's news, but not really news. Bleeding Cool had speculated on it. We all pretty much knew. Richard Rider is returning as Nova in November. And Sam Alexander, the current Nova, will also appear in that book. One thing that struck me was it's Nova in November, so maybe it's Nova member? I don't know. Maybe they'll do something with that, maybe not. Anyway, there's a couple links to articles. You can go check it out. The Civil War II panel, again, not anything that they really revealed that was new. Clearly, it's their event that's going on right now. They did discuss some of the motivations behind decisions and such, so you can go check out those articles if you'd like. Christopher Priest won an Inkpot Award, and he talked about his long career. There's a really long article on Bleeding Cool that's got a lot of great information, even with Christopher Priest talking about how he got involved with Deathstroke. So that's a really great article. I encourage you to go and read it. Christopher Priest is definitely a legend in the industry, a well-deserved Inkpot Award, and we're hoping to have him on the show soon to talk about Deathstroke. The Cup of Joe panel, much like the previous Civil War II panel, it covered a lot of books, but there was little real info revealed. Again, there's a couple of different articles you can check out. The comic book resource article goes a little more in depth on the storylines. Basically, it's just kind of a panel where Marvel recaps everything they're doing. Sometimes they announce items, sometimes not, you know, new stuff. This year, not so much with the new stuff, although there was a trailer played for the Legion TV series that's coming up from Marvel. We did find out that Jason Reynolds is writing a Miles Morales young adult novel, so anything that can interest young readers, you know, maybe somebody who's a young reader who enjoys reading prose, maybe this will convert them into a comic fan, so that definitely could be a good thing. There's also going to be an all-ages Groot book, in the vein of Goodnight Moon. It's going to be called Goodnight Groot. So that's exciting. Check out the article there. We had an official announcement of Inhumans versus X-Men. Again, something that we already knew. Jeff Lemire, Charles Soule, art by Lanil Francis Yu. There's a couple of articles there linked to, I think there was some new art shown. And again, this is going to tie in with the death of X in a way, in that we're going to see what happened with the Terra Genesis cloud going around Earth and such. So Axel Alonso himself started referring to it as IVX, so I'm sure that's going to catch on, much like the Avengers versus X-Men event did back in the day. But man, am I getting really fatigued with these Marvel events. There's actually going to be a second IVX title, and it's going to be specifically about the Terra Genocide, as they're calling it. So again, there's a link to the article on Bleeding Cool. You can check that out. So there's going to be a new Black Panther spinoff title titled Black Panther World of Wakanda. It's going to be Ta-Nehisi Coates, Roxane Gay, Aletha Martinez. It's going to focus on the Midnight Sisters, kind of a subset of the Dora Milaje Black Panther's bodyguards. The only thing I worry about is this is kind of token diversity, just diversity for diversity's sake rather than good comics. So, you know, I guess time will tell. Also, there's going to be an epilogue to Civil War II, a one-shot called The Oath, written by Nick Spencer. It's really going to get into a lot of the Steve Rogers as a Hydra agent kind of thing. Seems very interesting what he's doing there. The hubbub over Steve Rogers being a Hydra agent has kind of subsided. I think people are just resigned to it at this point, but I think it makes for good stories, but it's weird seeing Steve Rogers as basically a bad guy. Marvel also announced a dead Doctor Strange Punisher Magic Bullet series. It's going to be digital first. It seems like that could be a good story. Certainly not two characters you would throw together or think to team up, so I guess we'll see how that plays out. There was also the Spider-Man panel. Dead No More, The Clone Conspiracy is basically what the big spider story is going forward. We're going to see Dr. Octopus play a big role. Obviously, the Jackal's going to play a big role. Prowler. So fans of Spider-Man should definitely check out that article from Comic Book Resources. The Marvel Divided We Stand panel teased the future, but again, like a lot of the Marvel panels, not a lot of new information, but you can go and read the article on Bleeding Cool to hear about or refresh your memory with what's going on as far as like the new Thor series and some of the other series that have been announced for the fall. Switching over to DC, we found out over the weekend, there was a lot of talk about this at the Hilton Bar, for example, that Geoff Johns actually got a promotion a while back to president of DC Entertainment. Now, that's the title that Diane Nelson already holds. Well, Diane Nelson is not stepping down. She's not being replaced. So I guess they're just going to be co-presidents. Dan Didio and Jim Lee are still going to report directly to Diane Nelson. So I don't know if this just was basically like a title change for Geoff Johns. Or if it came with a pay increase, I'm not exactly sure, but it coincided with his new responsibilities over on the DC cinematic side of things. And well deserved. You know, Rebirth is John's idea, and it seems to be going over very well. So you can read the article at Heroic Hollywood if you like to know more about that. We also found out that Tom Taylor is writing a prequel comic for Injustice 2. He was the creator, the writer that wrote the Injustice comic that was super popular, that blew up digital first, much like this new comic is going to be digital first. So he wrote it when Injustice came out, tied in with the comic, or the video game rather, and so they're going to go down that road again. Should be pretty cool. We found out that Garth Ennis is writing a Dastardly and Muttley comic for the Hanna-Barbera line at DC Comics. There's a couple links there. You can check out the art. That's a pretty interesting take. Garth Ennis, known for his, let's say, salty take on things. You know, he doesn't pull any punches, but he's also a great writer of war comics. So it may be the perfect fit there. A few times over the course of San Diego Comic-Con, Jim Lee was asked about having some Wildstorm characters show up in the DCU, and he wasn't the only one asked. We do know there's going to be a big announcement as far as DC Wildstorm coming at New York Comic-Con. I'm sure the speculation will start soon on what exactly that's going to be, but we won't know anything official until New York Comic-Con. During the Batman panel, a fan was asked, or a fan rather asked the Benson sisters about making the Killing Joke canon again and why that was important. And that fan was actually me. But you can go read the article on Bleeding Cool to see what they had to say. And there's also other information on the Batman panel. Scott Snyder was on the panel, James Tynan, Tom King. So a lot of good information. It was a well-attended panel because, you know, it's Batman. So go and check that out. DC's Young Animal is all about Gerard Way's ideas. I sat down and talked to Gerard, and I'm going to have that interview up later this week. A lot of good details in the interview, a lot of good details in this article from Bleeding Cool. Gerard has some really cool ideas, and he's all about being innovative and doing things that haven't been done before. There was also the Suicide Squad's panel with Rob Williams, Jimmy Palmiotti, Amanda Connor, Chad Harden, Philip Tan, Jim Lee, a lot of superstar creators on this panel because, of course, Harley Quinn is in the Suicide Squad and she's also in her own title. So Rob Williams talked about the new format of the book. It's going to be there's going to be a backup in each issue and a shorter main story. I think this will give a lot of people who aren't familiar with the Suicide Squad some good information, especially those that pick up the book based on what they've seen in the movie. They're going to be introduced to a whole new world, and the backups are going to be kind of like origins and the backgrounds of the characters. So I think it's good. Plus, it's going to allow guest artists to come in and do those backups, such as Jason Fabok, Gary Frank, you know, some of the big names. And also the shorter main story will allow Jim Lee and Philip Tan to stay on schedule with their art. There was also an interesting article on Comic Book Resources showing some of the art shown at the panel with Amanda Waller looking like she's returning to form, her pre-Flashpoint, her pre-New 52 form, which is interesting. We've talked about that on the show before, if they were heading that direction. That same panel also saw the Harley Quinn creative team talk about what makes her tick, why she's so popular, is she a hero, is she a villain? So there's a couple of articles there you can go and check out. Also, in the co-publisher's spotlight and during their press junket, Jim Lee and Dan Didio talked about DC planning to take their time to get the story right as far as it comes to Watchmen Rebirth, the story that Geoff Johns started in his DC Universe Rebirth issue. It's going to play out over time. They want to make sure they get it right. They certainly don't want to repeat mistakes they made in the past with the New 52 and losing legacy and things like that. Wonder Woman finally getting her due after 75 years. This is the 75th anniversary of Wonder Woman. Probably the most famous female superhero of all time. Took a long time for DC to seem to get it right or seem to be happy with an incarnation for a film. You know, it's been rumored to be around, you know, worked on for a long time. Different scripts, different people working on it, different directors attached, different people. They tried a TV show at one point. There was the pilot with Adrian Padalecki or whatever her name is that wasn't picked up. So it seems like they finally have everything lined up. The planets and stars are aligned for Wonder Woman to finally get the attention she deserves. Between what the creative team on the book is doing with Greg Rucka, Nicola Scott, Liam Sharp, Laura Martin, and Patty Jenkins and Gal Gadot on the movie side of things, Geoff Johns, of course, had input in the Wonder Woman movie as well. It seems like people are more excited for Wonder Woman than ever. Saw way more Wonder Woman cosplay than I ever have before at a comic book convention. Wonder Woman finally getting her due, and it's a great thing. So you can go check out that link to the article on Comic Book Resources, and it actually has a video on that page as well. You can watch the entire Wonder Woman 75th anniversary panel. There was also a panel, a look behind the scenes at how Rebirth came together and where it goes from here. Basically from the start, when Geoff Johns first walked into Dan Didio's office and said that he wanted to end all the books at 52, number 52 that is, and launch again with Rebirth. So if you'd like to know more about that, check out the link to the article. Josh Williamson discussed on one of the panels how Flash number 3 kicks a series into high gear. And that's the book that came out today, so I definitely can vouch for that. It was a great issue, and I can't wait to see where Flash goes from here. So if you'd like to read about some of his thought process and what's gone into the storyline he's creating, you can go and check out the article at Comic Book Resources. There was a Young Metropolis and Young Gotham panel. It's aiming some of those young characters at new readers, still trying to keep in line with the theme of the DC Rebirth. With legacy characters like Supergirl, but also with the new incarnations of Teen Titans, and, you know, legacy again with Batgirl, but keeping it fresh for a new audience. So you can go read that article, hear what the creators have to say about keeping that balance. Also in that panel, John Boy Myers, the artist on Teen Titans, showed off quite a bit of art. And there's a link that specifically shows what that art is. It's really great. I encourage you to go and check it out. Likewise, there's a lot of DC Rebirth art from upcoming series that was showed off. Supergirl, Harley Quinn, and more. There's a link in the show notes. You can go and check it out. There's some really cool cyborg-looking art as well. The Jim Lee Spotlight panel, that was a panel I actually attended. I'm always struck by just how funny and down-to-earth Jim Lee is. A lot of people, I think, are intimidated when they meet him. He's such an iconic name, and he has legendary status in the comic industry. Super popular artist to this day. But really, he's a dad, and, you know, he's a nice guy. I don't know what it's like to work for him. I've heard that he's can be demanding. But I don't think he demands anything of the people that work for him that he doesn't demand of himself, basically a hard work and dedication. But just to kind of illustrate how down-to-earth he is, one of the last questions he was asked at the panel was what he hopes his legacy would be. And he basically talked about raising well-adjusted children and sending them out into the world to make the world a better place. So, I mean, as a dad myself, I can definitely relate to that. And like I said, I think it shows how down-to-earth he is. They were also asked, they being Dan Didio and Jim Lee, were asked what's going on with Milestone. It was last year at Comic-Con that it was announced that DC and Milestone were going to do a relaunch of the Milestone properties. It's been a quiet year, haven't had a lot of details, and basically that's down to Reggie Hudlin's busy schedule, but it is still moving forward. They still talk on a weekly basis, so hopefully we see some movement on that soon. The Vertigo panel, Gail Simone, Rob Williams, Lee Bermejo, Tom King, really some of the best comics being overlooked today. You know, Vertigo has kind of lost some of its cachet. That doesn't mean that it's got any less quality or any diminishing returns as far as good stories. I think that a lot of the original creators of Vertigo that were involved in it, you know, they've kind of moved on to Image and other places. I don't know why that's necessarily the case, because you can do a creator-owned book and Vertigo may be happy to put it out for you. Maybe Image offers a little more creative freedom. I'm not exactly sure. And then, as I mentioned, DC's Young Animal imprint, overseen by Gerard Way, is trying to capture the original Vertigo feel. But the original DC Vertigo is still around. They're putting out some great stories. I'll just name off two, that being Unfollow, and by Rob Williams, and Clean Room by Gail Simone. They're both excellent, excellent books. So I also Sheriff of Babylon by Tom King, I should mention. There's some really, really good stories, and it's just too bad that they're not getting more attention. So go read the article. There's a lot of good information there from Newsarama. Superman panel. Jaden attended this panel based on from what he told me and what I could glean from the article from Comic Book Resources. Superman's in very good hands. The creative team, to a man, are very excited to be working on their various Superman titles. Dan Jurgens, Gene Yang, Peter J. Tomasi, Patrick Gleason, Jorge Jimenez. You know, Superman's the one that started it all. They're aware of that. They're aware of how important he is, what an icon he is. And they just really want to tell good stories, and fresh stories and new stories, new dynamic with Superman and his son. That's a dynamic we haven't seen in comics before in regards to Superman. So I really love what they're doing with Superman, and hopefully it can get some new readers excited as well. You know, Batman consistently outsells Superman, and it wasn't always that way. It'd be awesome to see if Superman could approach some of those Batman-like numbers. Moving on to some of the independents, Valiant announced at their retail summit that they're giving away 100,000 copies of Faith Number One to retailers, and a little tease of what's to come, because that second printing, Faith Number One, is going to be 48 pages, and it's going to contain a lot of previews for upcoming things. So they're encouraging the retailers. It's a $2.99 price tag, but they're encouraging retailers to give a deep discount or even just give it away to customers that are interested. So there's a couple of articles there, including one about Divinity and 4001 AD and Exo Manowar coming to an end. So a lot of exciting things going on with Valiant. They continue to put out very high quality books, from their best book to their worst book, probably the least drop off of any publisher in the industry today. They didn't have a lot of big news or any big announcement at the show. You know, they don't have a booth. Usually they tend to save their big announcements for New York Comic Con, being that that's their hometown. But you know, I've talked at length about the poker game, and what great guys they are over at Valiant. So if you're not familiar with Valiant, I really encourage you to give them a try. It's definitely something different from the big two, and they really care about their fans. The Archie Comics panel, they talked a lot about changing and telling, changing the characters, telling new stories, but staying recognizable. They talked about the upcoming Riverdale TV show, how those characters are going to grow and change throughout the course of the story. And Archie's really at a place they've never been before, with creators like Mark Waid and Fiona Staples and Adam Hughes working on some of their titles. So it's an exciting time if you're a fan of Archie Comics. I don't know how much longtime fans like these changes, because I basically don't know anyone who's a longtime Archie Comics fan. So if you are and you have an opinion about it, reach out to me and let me know what you think about all this. There was Several image panels. The one I'm going to talk about, though, basically, and the link to the Bleeding Cool article, basically, Jim Zub and some other creators talking about their mainstream comics, they're creator-owned, but they're really trying to push the envelope and look to the future. Specifically, the creator-owned titles at Image seem to be kind of a farm of ideas, if you will, for other properties, for other media. And I think for that reason that Image gets a lot of speculation. They get a lot of people that just buy their, if Image puts out a number one, people will just buy it in the hopes that it's the next Walking Dead number one without ever actually even taking the time to read it. And I think a lot of good creator-owned comics are being overlooked, unfortunately. I mean, it's kind of a catch-22. We're in a golden age of comics. There's more great comic stories coming out than ever before, especially on the independent side of things. But at the same time, there's only so much money to go around. So I worry sometimes that maybe there's too many good comics. And then I turn around and think, well, how can you have too many good comics? So it's tough. It's tough. So go check out that article. There's some good detail on some really great Image properties that are being put out right now. Top Cow Studios, which releases their books through Image, have been scaling back a little bit lately, focusing on improving quality moving forward and staying on schedule. They didn't specifically say, but there's speculation in the Bleeding Cool article that part of the reason they haven't been putting out as much content is because they put out their stuff through Image, and Image is kind of increasing their stipulations or their kind of guidelines. You know, basically they're not going to put out a series if it's going to be consistently late. They just want to have all their trains running on time because it looks better. So Top Cow has scaled back on releasing of books, but they haven't necessarily scaled back on the creation of books. And what that means is they're getting a lot of stuff done, and then they'll be able to release once a 5 or 6 issue series is completely done, they can release it and they're all going to come out on time. That can only help in the long run. So I encourage you to go read about Top Cow. You know, they're one of my favorite publishers. They put out some of the best books. Think Tank in particular, Bloodstain, Sunstone, they're all high quality. Postal, I'll mention, Tithe, really, really good stuff. Skybound Entertainment, that's Robert Kirkman's imprint over at Image. They keep trucking along with supposedly a new ending for Walking Dead. Robert Kirkman has said all along he knows how it ends, and the ending has changed over time. And so with this revelation that he's changed it again, maybe it's just more room to keep telling the story because Walking Dead shows no signs of slowing down. And also there's an article on Comic Book Resources about their new Horizon title, which really is their first hard science, hardcore sci-fi property, and it really increases their sci-fi footprint. And I wouldn't be surprised to see that get optioned for a TV show as well, like all Skybound properties seem to. IDW announced a new Optimus Prime solo ongoing. They also had a panel talking about their Hasbro booth, the Hasbro-verse, rather, with tons of info and exciting times. And I almost feel like this is, you can get in on the ground floor of a new cohesive universe if you jump on with the revelation. It's ROM Space Nine, it's Micronauts, it's G.I. Joe, it's Transformers. I think this has the potential to be really, really good. And the last bit of news I'm going to mention is the dates for San Diego 2017 have been announced, and it might be a lot easier to get badges next year. The floor seemed a lot less crowded this year than in previous years. There's been various speculations for why that's the case. I've heard people talking about the fact that because of the RFID, it really cut down on the counterfeit badges, which, you know, makes a lot of sense. And I think that even San Diego itself, even the convention, the people that put on the convention, didn't realize just how widespread the counterfeit problem was. Because based on that, having to swipe your badge to get in, and also having to swipe your badge to get in meant that you couldn't, like, say you and a friend have a badge, two badges, right? One friend, you both go in, One of you takes your badge off, give it to your friend. Your friend walks it outside, gives it to another person, and then he walks in. And you repeat that over and over, and you could get, I don't even know how many people could get in. So based on that, I mean, that's not possible, again, because of the RFID. So it's a pretty interesting dilemma. I heard complaints from retailers that there wasn't as many people on the floor, there wasn't as many people spending money. I mean, for me, it definitely seemed less crowded, and that's a good thing. From a retailer's perspective, it's not, because they don't really care how you get in. They just care if you're there to spend money. Also, it seemed like there was more off-site things than ever before. I mean, just so much off-site things going on with Comic-Con HQ, with Nerd HQ, just all kinds of stuff outside, pulling people away from the floor. So I wouldn't be surprised if they sell more badges next year. And so it's a possibility that also with D23 being the week before, that's the big Disney event that's going to pull away Marvel fans and such. Also, it seemed like, I mean, there was a Justin Timberlake movie. I can't think of what it is off the top of my head, but Hall H for this movie, Justin Timberlake was in. Another movie featuring Oliver Stone, or directed by Oliver Stone, or something that had a panel in Hall H. Both of those panels at Hall H were only half filled. So it definitely seems like, unless you're a comic book movie, you probably should skip San Diego. So it looks like 20th Century Fox was right to sit out this year. I don't know. It just seems like it's changing. They had Ballroom 20, which is much, 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 much smaller. It's about a quarter of the size of Hall H, held a lot of the DC TV shows, and it was packed. You couldn't get in. It seems like all that needs to be moved to Hall H, and so they're definitely going to have to re-examine. It's really, really a changing of the guard, so to speak. TV seems to be where it's at right now, and you know, like a lot of the signings for Wynonna Earp, the Expanse panel was well attended. As I said, all the DC TV stuff, Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., that seems to be where it's at. Don't get me wrong, the comic book movies still do well. The DC booth was a zoo when the Suicide Squad members cast were there. But when it comes to non-comic book movies, people just don't seem to really care. So, as I said, Comic-Con is its own unique experience. It's always a good time. And this year was no different. But it's constantly changing. You got to stay flexible, and yeah, I guess that wraps it up for mostly comic news. It'll be interesting as the growing pains go on and San Diego changes. What exactly we'll see from next year. One other thing I'll mention real quick is that there seemed to be a lot less cosplay this year too. I have absolutely no idea why, but it was significantly less than previous years. So that's going to do it for the wrap-up of comic book news from San Diego. I will let you guys hear Jade and I talking about all the things we got, the swag we got, the things we got, the sketches we got. And then we'll finish up the show with the DC Week 8 Rebirth Spotlight.
Mr. Simpson will now be autographing 8x10 glossies of Poochie. One per customer. Please form a line. There will be no cutting. I'm talking to you, Mr. Cutter.
We're going to do kind of a different kind of recap of San Diego. We're going to talk about the interviews we conducted and the people that we talked to and also the things that we bought. So we're just going to kind of go through our list. We made a kind of a schedule each day on Google Calendar. So we're going to go through and try to jog our memories about what we did. So we mentioned on the previous wrap-up episode about how Jaden wanted to get interviews from Man in the High Castle. So that was kind of the first thing on Thursday, but it didn't work out. So after that, got on Mark Brooks' sketch, mentioned that before. Then headed down to the DC booth, and I think the first sketches we got were from Philip Tan.
Yeah, I believe so.
So we saw a few people. I think the first person I got to interview was John Semper He's, of course, the writer on Cyborg, so that interview will be rolling out later on. And then also later on Thursday, I interviewed Gail Simone. So, again, that interview will be coming out later in the week. As far as other people we saw Julie and Shauna Benson. It was great to see them. It's always a pleasure. I met Rob Williams for the first time. Of course, the writer on Unfollow, Suicide Squad. He also the recently finished Martian Manhunter series. Saw Babs Tarr. Said hi to her. Talked to Steve Orlando briefly. Oh, we also got sketches on Thursday from Brad Walker.
Did we get it on Thursday? I thought we got it later. I thought we decided that we were going to grab it one of the other days.
I think. Well, I got mine.
Maybe you got yours and then I got mine. Yeah, I think you got yours and then I got mine the next day. I think that's what it was.
Yeah, I got a Black Manta. Mm-hmm. And from Gabe LTAB, I got him. I didn't get him on Thursday. I got him on Friday. Yeah. I got a Mira, and then I got Aspen, or my daughter, a Aquaman from him. So that was really cool. Also saw Tom King, met Raphael Albuquerque for the first time. Who else did we see? Oh, we met Yvonne Reese and Joe Prado and got some real quick sketches from them. I believe I interviewed Mark Andraco about the upcoming Adam Strange and Hawkman series on Thursday as well. I don't think we hit any panels, did we? Did you go to the Warcraft panel?
Yeah, I did go to the Warcraft panel on Thursday. That was interesting. They talked a lot about the artifact weapons, if any of you guys know any much about WoW. But it was an interesting panel. Not too much news, considering it's Gamescom is next week, so.
Yeah, and then the I guess you decided not to try the Overwatch panel. It was going to be too...
I was pretty tired at that point. I didn't really feel like going to the Overwatch panel.
Yeah, Thursday. I mean, I guess it's because it's been so long, but just, I don't know. Thursday felt like we didn't necessarily accomplish that much.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And what did we do Thursday night? Oh, we walked to Ralph's.
Oh, yeah.
To get the stuff for the Valiant Poker Party. Yep. So I could finish prepping the food. And then went through the drive-thru, got some food, went home, got all the food ready for Valiant Poker night on Friday night. And then Friday, got a Max Landis wristband, and yep, then forgot to go and get our stuff signed.
Yep.
Then, yeah, as we mentioned, Brad Walker and Gabe LTAB. I talked to Rob Williams. We went by the Marvel booth when Mark Brooks was scheduled to be there, because sometimes he does quick sketches, but he wasn't doing them that day. Although I was on his regular sketch list, so I got an amazing sketch from him anyway. I interviewed Hope Larson and Raphael Albuquerque about the Batgirl title. I also got to interview Lee Bermejo. Lee, man, he's one of my favorite creators. I know I say that a lot, but he's in the top five for sure. He's such a nice guy. Love talking to Lee. He's so sincere, so hardworking, so passionate. So it was great to see him. We also saw Dan Jurgens and Tyler Kirkham. Talked to them about Action Comics, how amazing it's been. I also talked to Gerard Way about DC's Young Animal. That was a little different, I guess you'd say. I just don't know that it's my cup of tea, but I definitely plan on covering it, because I know there's a lot of people who are not necessarily comic fans that are Gerard Way fans. And that's just based on already the amount of attention that my tweets about Gerard Way and the picture I took of them have been getting. So I know that there are people out there who are fans of Gerard Way, and they're going to need a way to get the news and know and want to learn about these comics. So, you know, I'm more than happy to do that for them. And in fact, some of you listening right now might be listening, for the first time, because you saw that I had interviewed Gerard Way, and that interview will definitely be out later this week. And, And yeah, we're gonna keep up. We're gonna cover DC Young Animal. We're gonna talk about it when it comes out. We'll keep you apprised of the news, just like we do with all the DC books. So no problems there. We also on Friday got to meet Jorge Jimenez.
Yep.
He was so cool.
Yeah.
He is just a really nice guy. He told me that he's basically living his dream right now by being on the Superman title. And I got a Superboy from him, mm-hmm. and it was so good. It's by far the favorite sketch I got at the DC booth. In a way, it kind of rivals my paid commission from Mark Brooks, just based on what he did and how quickly he did it and the fact that I got to stand there and watch him do it. So I can only imagine if I got a paid commission from him, what it would look like. Also met Bruno Redondo, mm-hmm. and I can't remember what I got. What did you get from Bruno?
I got a Mr. Freeze from Bruno.
No, I thought that was Daniel Sempier.
I'm pretty sure I got it from Bruno.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Oh, that's right. I got an Earth 2 Superman Val from him. And I should say, Philip Tan, I got Deadshot. I don't know if I mentioned that. Real quick Superman sketch, just like a profile from Yvonne Reese. Joe Prado did an Aquaman for me. I mentioned the Brad Walker Black Manta, the Gabe Eltab Mira, and then amazing John Kent from Jorge Jimenez. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was Daniel Sempier, because he was the one. Daniel Sempier we got on Friday as well, and he did Dead Man for me, and it's pretty awesome. Yeah, he did a Mr. Freeze for you, so I don't know who you got from Bruno.
Yeah, I don't remember.
So, I guess it must not have been that great if it didn't stick out. Was it Batman?
I'm not sure. I'll have to get back to you guys on that one.
Yeah, sketchbook's already packed up. Yeah. Dean's got to head for the airport soon. So, let's see. What else? Oh, you tried to go to the Rick and Morty panel.
Yeah, I got there about an hour early and then was in line for, I think I said this on the last episode, but I was in line for 15, 20 minutes before I realized, I'm probably not going to make this one.
Also met Patrick Gleason and Peter J. Tomasi. Talked to them about Superman, got book signed, so that was cool.
Yeah, I went to the Superman panel also on Friday, which was really interesting. I think the most interesting part was listening to Gene Yang talk about the whole process of him actually getting on the new Superman book.
How'd that come about? Give us the real quick.
He was talking about how Jim Lee and Dan Didio wanted to have a Chinese Superman, basically. And he said, no, I definitely don't want to do that. He said it sounded like a terrible idea to him. And he basically went to meet with them just out of respect, and once they started talking to him about it, the character started talking to him, and he decided he was going to do the book.
Yeah, I talked to Gene on Saturday, and he's another one that's really sincere, really genuine. It's just a super, super nice guy. Mm-hmm. You can really hear the passion he has. It doesn't surprise me to hear. Another word I would use to describe Gene is integrity.
Yeah.
It doesn't surprise me to hear that he would turn down something. You know, he's not going to do something just for the sake of doing it, just to get a paycheck, no matter how high profile it is. I think he's got to feel there's a worthwhile story there to tell. So, we also, as we mentioned, Daniel Sempier, I got the Dead Man, Jaden got the Mr. Freeze, and then we got to talk to Mark Guggenheim.
Yep.
It's always good to see Mark. We've had him on the show before. So we talked to him, of course, about Arrow and just a lot of things. It was good to catch up to Mark. And then we left a little early because, as we mentioned, the Valiant Poker Game. I made banh mi. I had lanyards made that we passed out. I got knocked out super early, but it was great. It was just great to hang out. That's always one of my highlights of San Diego, just seeing everybody. You know, we mentioned the names last night: Adam Freeman, Hunter Goranson, Fred Pierce, Warren Simons, Dinesh Shamdasani, Robert Venditti showed up. David Barron was there. Just a lot of fun. Just hanging out with the guys and playing poker. And then we always, the Valiant guys always bring us a book, or somebody brings a book. It's a variant usually. I think this one's a 1 in 50 of Bloodshot. It looks like it's number 14. It's kind of an homage to the Bloodshot number one famous chromium cover by Barry Windsor Smith, but this one has Blood Squirt. So what we do is everybody that's playing poker signs it. Like all 24 people signed it, and the books are numbered from 1 to 24, and based on the place you get, that's what book you get. So if you're knocked out first, you get 24. If you're knocked out second, you get 23, and so on and so on. And I got 23. I've always gotten one or two before. Just an incredibly bad beat. That's all you can say. You know, when you flop trips and somebody else flops better trips, that just doesn't happen very often. That's just some really bad luck there. So, it was actually the earliest poker night ever for us as well. It really flew by. I feel like we started earlier than usual because, like last year, we had the oven didn't work and it caused problems. And I didn't serve the food until like, I think 9 o'clock. But we were actually the first ones there pretty much.
Yeah.
And this year I decided to make something that was, you know, much quicker. Just based on not basically having to cook anything there, just put it together. And for those of you not familiar with banh mi, it's Vietnamese street food. It's kind of like the Vietnam version of a sub sandwich or deli sandwich. So, and I used authentic Vietnamese ingredients. The packages weren't even in English. I had to get help to make sure I was buying the right thing at the Asian supermarket here in Phoenix. So. I was a little nervous, but it was a big hit. People having three and four, or two and three, actually, sandwiches. So that was a lot of fun. And then Saturday, the busy, crazy day, although I felt like Sunday wasn't much slower. It was crazy. You know, they had the cast of Wonder Woman and then the cast of Suicide Squad there, and that caused just a huge, right in the middle of Florida, D.C., is just a huge traffic jam. But it also meant that the day was a little easier as far as interviews, because when that was going on, you know, it's loud, it's crowded, there's no way they're going to be holding interviews at that time. So it freed up some time. So we saw Bernard Chang. I got a chance to interview Robert Venditti. We went to the Batman panel at 11:15. Then I had an interview with the creators for the ROM TV series. The ROM. I was thinking about the next thing we did. That's why I said TV series. The ROM comic from IDW, and as I said, talked to Gene Yang. And then kind of one of the big things we wanted to do. It was kind of like a thing we for sure didn't want to miss. Is Jaden and I, both fans of The Expanse on Sci-Fi Channel. So it's the first time we ventured over to the Indigo Ballroom, which seats about 2,600 people, and did that panel. And that was really cool. Like Jaden mentioned on the previous episode, the whole cast was there. I got to ask a question, so that was really cool. Also on Saturday from 3 to 5, Lee Bermejo was doing sketches. And you went to this art dealer, and if you bought $300 worth of Lee Bermejo art, he would do a sketch for you. And it basically sold out in 5 minutes. And because it was from 3 to 5 and we were at the Expanse panel from 3 to 4, by the time I got there, he was booked up. But he did give me a print. He was selling some prints there. It's basically going to be a wraparound cover on All-Star Batman issue number 1. And he had it there as a print for $20. But like, as I said, such a nice guy. He's like, for you, here, just take it. I want you to have it. So that was really cool. And we're hoping to have Lee on in the future. I will say this. His Suicide Squad, Suiciders title. Man, you could tell how tired I am. I felt like all day at work, my brain was like still, I felt like my brain was still in San Diego. I kept forgetting things. Anyway, his Suiciders title from DC Vertigo, the sales on it haven't been great. And it's a real shame because the book, the art is absolutely amazing. And it's also a really good story. So, I'm going to be mentioning it on the show when it comes time for the trade to come out. Lee told me, and you'll hear in the interview that comes out later this week, about how they switched the chronology around to make it make a little more sense for someone who's never read it before. So, as I said, I'll be mentioning that, and I think it's definitely worth picking up for the art alone. I also got to meet Kurt Sutter, the showrunner, creator of Sons of Anarchy. He's got a new comic called Lucas Stand that's coming out from Boom Studios. So that was cool to meet him. And he as well expressed some interest in coming on the show. So hopefully we can do that as well. Met Nick Spencer. Well, I've met Nick Spencer before, but I got a book signed by him. You tried to go to the Ballroom 20 after the Expanse. But being that Expanse ended at 4 and the what you wanted to see at Ballroom 20 started with Legends of Tomorrow, started at 4:15.
Yeah.
And it was pretty much, and then following that was Flash, and then following that was Arrow. So that didn't really go down.
Yeah, I went up there just to peek and see if there was any chance, and there was a huge line, and the people already in there were in there for Supergirl, so I figured that probably 75% of those people are probably going to be staying there for the majority of the rest of the DC panels, and there's huge lines, so I was like, I don't really feel like waiting in line for something that I might not even be able to get into.
Yeah, then from 6 to 7 was the Valiant Fans panel, so that was a good time, and then we had a little break, and then the Darwin Cook, Remembering Darwin Cook panel that we mentioned last night. I really feel like Saturday was a day where we should have done more. But honestly, this year we really kind of stepped back and tried not to do too much and just tried to enjoy ourselves. But we didn't check out any of the stuff for the first time ever. We didn't check out any of the stuff outside.
Yeah.
And Saturday was the half hour happy hour live recording from 5 to 6 at Petco Park, and I really, really am really disappointed that I missed that. You know, I planned on going. It was, and it's just the fact that it's so far to walk.
Yeah.
And it's not so, I mean, it's like it starts at 5, you got to leave the show floor by 4:30, and you're not going to get back until 6:30, so you know, it's almost,
so you might as well not even go back to the show floor.
Yeah, exactly. And I also wanted to go check out some of the Comic-Con HQ stuff, which I didn't. So it's just, that's just the nature of San Diego, man. There's so much to do, it's hard to do everything. Yeah. Sunday, based on the fact that DC wasn't doing any interviews, I did have an interview with Mark Brooks. I was supposed to have an interview with Addie Granoff and Brian Buccioletto. Two of those three fell through. I did talk to Mark Brooks. Addie was just, he was behind on his commissions, and he just didn't have time. And, you know, I had told him and his wife, Tamsin, who's lovely, that, it wasn't a big deal. You know, I wanted to talk to him. He wanted to talk to me. But at the same time, he's there for his fans. You know, he's agreed to do these commissions for him, and so obviously he needs to get them done. I totally understand. You know, we're just going to have him on later via Skype or over the phone, where it's not crazy and it's not a lot of background noise, and we can take our time and have a longer chat even. So, and same thing with Brian. You know, I've talked to Brian several times. He's a great guy. And the few times we went by his table in Artist Alley on Sunday, he wasn't ever there. I'm sure he was busy and probably fried just about like everybody else is on Sunday at Comic-Con. So, again, he's got a new series coming out that I want to have him on the show to talk about. So the plan is to have him on when I cover Long Beach Comic-Con in September. So other than that, said farewell basically to a lot of people. It was really cool. We did go to the Breaking Into Comics, My Secret Origin panel, DC. that we mentioned last show, and we shopped. Sunday was really our shopping day.
Yep.
So one of my big purchases on Sunday was I bought a Spectrum power deck. So it's basically like a portable cell phone charger. You could really charge anything on it. It's got Spectrum, the show from Con Man, on there. I got Shannon Eric Denton, who is a friend, to sign it for me. Hopefully I'll get Nathan Fillion and PJ Harzma and Alan Tudyk to sign it eventually as well. Another big purchase. They were all sold out at the booth, Terry Moore's booth, but over at the Bud Plant booth, they had given him some to sell, and so I got the Rachel Rising Omnibus hardcover, and it was... It had already been signed by Terry, but I got him to personalize it. Took it back over to his booth and got him to personalize it for me. So that's real cool. Really, really good series. I read the first 6 or 7 issues and was really interested. And then I missed a few issues. And rather than trying to go back and track them down, I just waited till it was finished. And then I have it in hardcover. Let's see. What else did I buy? We bought some prints.
Yeah.
From Richard Friend.
I bought a couple prints from Art Tiber.
I thought I bought a print from somebody else. I can't think. Okay. Oh, I bought a print from Alex Sinclair.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was a Jim Lee Trinity. So that was pretty cool. I also spent $50 on a limited edition ROM. Issue 1, limited to 500. So they had one that was limited to 1,000, and the title is in gold or in silver foil. And then they had one where the ROM himself and the title were in gold foil. So I bought that. You bought some of the little Rack prints. That's yep. R-A-K. He's an artist. Just Google Rack comic art or whatever, and you'll see he does these little stylized kind of mini figures that are really cool. What else? What else did you buy, Jaden?
I thought I was going to buy the first collected edition of Walking Dead, but I ended up not picking that up because the copy that they had was pretty thrashed, so decided I'd probably pick that up later. But I also picked up the Thief of Thieves first collected, graphic novel, and a Watchmen paperback set.
Yeah, trade paperback. Now, these are all 50% off. Now, we went to the 50... There's a place called Torpedo Comics, 50% off trades. But we didn't... The fact that we didn't go till Sunday, they already sold out of Walking Dead Volume 1.
Yeah, they've sold out of that the first day.
The trade paperback, so... You ended up getting 2 and 3, figuring you'd pick up one later, and then we go over to this other place where they're half off trades, but some of them are used. Some are new, but some of them are used. And we find an omnibus, which is basically the first 8 trades all together in one, and it's like retail of like $59.99. But yeah, it was pretty thrashed, and the guy would not give us any break on it. We had that. We had the first trade of Thief of Thieves. We had Watchmen, and then I got brand new, not used, brand new 2 hardcovers, the 75th anniversary hardcover from DC of Justice Society of America, and the 75th anniversary hardcover of Robin the Boy Wonder. So those are $39.99 each, so half off, they're $20. So when you added everything up, it was like $88, and we offered the guy $80, and he wouldn't go for it. He's like, no, sorry, can't do it. So Jaden decided. Now, in the meantime, he had gone back because he decided he's going to get this omnibus of Walking Dead. So he goes back to Torpedo Comics and says, hey, can I exchange this trade paperback 2 and 3 for 9 and 10 so that he would basically have the first 10 trades. He'd have the first 8 in this omnibus and he'd have 9 and 10, so he wouldn't be repeating. And they said, okay. And so then he decided, okay, then I'll go ahead and – okay, so now I'm good to go. I'll get the omnibus. And then the guy wouldn't go for it. And so instead of getting all the stuff, he decided not to get the omnibus because, you know, as I said, it basically would have been paying the full price full, well, I would have been paying half price for the two I got, so I'd have been paying $40. And he would have been paying 30 for The Walking Dead and 10 for the Watchmen trade, and it would have been like getting the Thief of Thieves trade paperback for free.
Yeah.
But the guy wouldn't go for it. So he decided not to get the omnibus and instead just got the Watchmen and Thief of Thieves. So I also bought Archangel 1, Issue 2, which is small press, Log Dog Comics. I have Issue 1. I've read it. It's about a race car driver that dies, goes to hell, and he's basically then is challenged to race against all these other people in hell, and the winner gets to come back to life, basically, and escape hell. So they had Volume 2 there, so I picked that up. Also, I feel like there was something else, but I cannot think of what it is. I got a lot of comics signed. Basically, all those people I mentioned that I talked to got their Rebirth work signed. Got some prints. Got my Mark Brooks sketch. We got some DC posters they were handing out. Got some of those signed by the creators. We met some of the people that worked on Injustice 2, like Phil Lamar and I think his name's Greg Benson? George Benson. Something like that. And Laura Bailey. And you'll be hearing their voices on the show. I'll just leave it at that. And I guess that's it. You bought some other stuff. What else did you pick up?
What else?
Like some pop figures.
Oh yeah, I got two pop figures. I got a couple Fallout pop figures. I got I went by the Blizzard booth, got a couple of the they had this machine that put out these little small figures that had a chance to have you win a prize in them, but the actual thing that might have the prizes are these little, I don't know, little toys. I got a couple of those. What else did I get?
Todd Knock gave you his sketchbook.
Oh yeah, Todd Knock gave me his sketchbook, and he gave us both Guardians of the Globe Volume 2, which is kind of like a side story from the Invincible Universe with his art.
Yeah, and I mentioned the Liam Sharp sketch that I got for answering your trivia question right at the DC booth. So that was really cool. And I guess that's about it.
Yep.
As far as things that we picked up. One other person that I did run into was Brian Christman. If you listen to a lot of comic book podcasts, you may know him better as Pants from the CGS podcast. So that was cool. Also talked to Uncle Sal. Sal Sabananti works basically in charge at the Alex Ross booth. Alex Ross booth was very different this year. Previous years, it was basically just kind of this low fence with tables at various places with art sitting on it. And man, their booth this year is amazing. It is so nice looking. I don't know who designed it, but there's a second level. There's stairs that lead up to a second level. It's like an art gallery with framed pictures, and yeah, it is awesome. One of the best looking booths, if not the best looking booth at the show. It is awesome. At the DC booth, they had all the Suicide Squad costumes as well as some Wonder Woman costumes. I took pictures of those, so I'll be putting those up. And I guess that's about it.
Please do note, this is no ordinary comic book. It is in perma-mint condition. If you spill soda on it, drops fly off harmlessly onto lesser comics. Oh. As you are quite correct to gasp.
All right, DC Rebirth, Week 8. As we've talked about before a few times, the number of books keeps increasing. It makes it harder and harder to cover all of them. 9 books to read. Plus, this last weekend, Jaden and I were at San Diego Comic-Con. So that made it a little tough. Didn't get the books out. didn't share them around with everybody until today. So not everyone has read all the books, so just keep that in mind. But I think at least two of us have read everything, because Manny only missed one, and Jaden read that one. So at least two of us will have read each of the books. So we'll start with Action Comics 960. The writer on this continues to be Dan Jurgens. And this issue, the art is again by Tyler Kirkham, or I should say, the art by. So he's digitally penciling it and inking it, I suppose, and he did the colors as well. So, I apologize. The colors are by Ulysses Areola. But the art's amazing. Told Tyler that myself when we saw him at San Diego. So Wonder Woman appears in this issue. Take it away, Manny. You go first.
It was starting to get a little repetitive for me because this is the third issue and it's still Doomsday action. It's still what's going on with Clark Kent. It's still the entity in the background, kind of just looking on Lois, John. So I was getting kind of bored with it. Even with the inclusion of Wonder Woman, it just seemed a little bit repetitive. So I was looking for something new, and I kind of got it when I guess John gets overexcited over his dad coming back, and it looks like Doomsday hears him and decides to take off, I guess, you know, as a predator looking for the weaker prey to prey upon instead of obviously the group that it was fighting then. So it was okay. I didn't enjoy it as much as the other.
So you were saying you didn't enjoy this issue of action as much as the previous one, I think.
No, because it felt the same. It's still Doomsday action, still trying to figure out who Clark Kent is, is he in denial, is he not? The only real difference, I thought, you know, maybe Wonder Woman was going to add a little bit more flavor to it, but it was just more of the same. And then the only interesting part now going forward is Doomsday going after Jonathan, which does raise my interest a little bit. But overall, I didn't enjoy it as much as the other issues.
All right, Jaden, what about you? What did you think?
I could definitely see where Manny's coming from, saying it feels like more of the same, but I think that this is a setup issue. I think the next issue is going to have a lot of stuff happening in it. It felt kind of like, it felt to me like Superman had a pretty good moment with Lois there, which in most things that I've seen kind of means that something bad's going to happen. So, I mean, I enjoyed the issue. There were parts that I liked. I think it was good. A few of the panels are kind of a little weird, but for the most part, it's still good art. And I'm still enjoying the book. It seems like it is moving a little slow. Dan Jurgens was talking in the Superman panel in San Diego about how one of the good things about having a bi-monthly book is...
Bi-weekly, you had it right.
Bi-weekly book is that you get to have more in-depth stories. And it kind of feels like they're taking their time a little bit too much with this one.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to interview Dan Jurgens for the show. That was one of my questions that I planned on asking him. And I did see him and I did talk to him, but I didn't bring it up just because when I do, you know, when we do have him on at a later date, I want that question to still be spontaneous, you know. But it's true. I mean, I imagine the pacing is different. The story gets a little more room to breathe. But you do wonder if maybe they're taking a little too long. But it may just be that it's just kind of the way that he paced it out, you know, like it kind of ramped up slowly. And then last issue we saw, it was like all action. And then, you know, this issue's got some character moments in it. And it may just be that we get like all the answers we're looking for all come like, you know, one right after the other in kind of the same issue. But I guess only time will tell. I kind of agree with you, Jaden. It was one of those issues where there were a lot of cool moments. but maybe the sum of the parts aren't necessarily the sum of the parts aren't necessarily greater than the, you know, than you would be if you took each of those individual moments, you know, like maybe the little moments are more enjoyable than the sum of them. Because I really liked the page where he says he's picked up this trick from the Flash and he's counting how many punches he's thrown. You know, that was really cool. Seeing John react to his dad kind of knocking out Doomsday or knocking him into the sewers was cool. And then his reaction to breaking the window. I liked the little moment with Lois and Wonder Woman that you mentioned, Manny. Yeah, all in all, a great issue. The art is done really well. And the last page, you know, with Wonder Woman taking a big Doomsday punch and says the Doomsday Protocol. So very much looking forward to that. But yeah, I'm definitely ready to find out. I mean, the biggest question for me is who's Clark Kent? That's the biggest issue for me. That's what I want to know.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, all in all, pretty solid issue. I'm not going anywhere on Action Comics anytime soon. I'm definitely still in. On Action Comics. All right, next we're going to talk about Batgirl number one. Now, this is one of the ones that you didn't get a chance to read yet, right, Jaden?
Yeah, I'm planning on reading it. It just it was lower on the stack than the other ones, and it just didn't quite make it.
All right, so writer Hope Larson. The art is by Raphael Albuquerque. Dave McCaig on colors. I'll go first on this one. The art, typical Raphael Albuquerque art, which means the storytelling from panel to panel is done very well. Good layouts. He tends to alternate between long panels that go all the way across the page and much smaller panels that are kind of layered on top of those. That's kind of a very traditional look for an Albuquerque book. So there's nothing wrong with that. As far as the art itself, it's a little stylized, but this is somewhat lighter than a lot of Albuquerque art that I've seen before. Probably a lot of that is to do with the colors by Dave McCaig and just kind of the tone and the feel they want Batgirl to have. You know, most of the Albuquerque art I've seen is from American Vampire. So you expect that art to be a little darker. The colors, you know, obviously are a little more saturated. So it makes a difference. As far as the story itself, it's pretty solid. You know, it's basically Barbara has a lot of money now. She started an energy company. And it makes sense, you know. I mean, she's one of the smartest people in the DCU. So it makes sense that she could found some kind of a tech company or energy company. And she's decided to take the freedom that this newfound financial success has given her to kind of travel and kind of discover herself. We saw in the Batgirls and the Birds of Prey rebirth issue that Killing Joke happened. It's canon. We talked to the Benson sisters about that at San Diego Comic-Con. So it kind of makes sense that she wants to better herself, kind of find herself, find exactly who she is in and out of the cowl. So I like the idea. The supporting character we're introduced to kind of felt like, well, that's pretty convenient. You know, she travels all the way around the world and runs into somebody. It's quite a coincidence. I did like the other superhero that shows up in the book. That was an interesting take. I thought the action scenes were handled well. I did talk to Hope Larson at San Diego Comic-Con specifically about the timing, like how this is all going to play out in regards to the Birds of Prey book. If you want more information about that, you can check out the interview. So all in all, a good start. I definitely feel like they're not throwing away anything that came before as far as what the previous Batgirl team did. They're trying to incorporate that, much like the Benson sisters did on Birds of Prey. So I think if you were a fan of the previous Batgirl incarnation, that there'll be a lot for you to like here. I think, I mean, not as good, not the strongest rebirth issue I've read. But for now, I'm still in on Batgirl. Go ahead, Manny. What do you think?
Well, I was never really in on Batgirl. So
I should say that the previous incarnation actually lost me after the first arc. I don't know what it was about it. I just didn't care for it.
Yeah, good. I can see that. I don't know. Maybe it's just because it's not my cup of tea to say that. There were some really interesting moments. I like the fact that she was looking for a previous hero who had been around for so long that she got to, I think it was like 104 years old. So she wanted to interview her and I'm sure just to learn from her, which is pretty cool. It makes sense for her to seek somebody out like that. And I think my biggest problem was her supporting cast. I felt it was really weak. Like you said, it was just kind of convenient that somebody that she knew from her past just happened to be her roommate. It wasn't a bad issue, but you know, I just wasn't very interested.
Yeah, it would have made more sense considering that he's kind of in trouble with somebody for her to have kind of, like you said, she was looking to meet that previous hero. She could have been at the parade meeting that hero and seen, you know, something go down, seen this person come and attack, and have to go and save that guy rather than, I mean, it's one thing to run into him halfway across the world. It's another thing for him to actually be her hostile roommate. I mean, that is really, that is really pushing it.
Yeah, that's true.
So what do you think? Are you going to give the next issue a shot?
No, yeah, I am. I am because I'm still kind of interested in to learn a little bit more of what she's doing there. And obviously, I'll learn more about that other hero and what she had told her. I'm not 100% sold, but I'm curious enough to keep going.
Yeah, I'd say for me, the best thing about the issue is the cover by Raphael Albuquerque. It's outstanding.
Yeah, the cover is really well done. It's really, really colorful. And I like his artwork, so yeah, you're right. The artwork's good.
All right, on to Detective 937. You go first, Jaden. Well, real quick before you do, let me read the creative team. James Tynan, the fourth script. Alvaro Martinez on pencils. Raul Fernandez on inks. And Brad Anderson on colors.
I think my favorite part about this issue is was the art. I didn't really enjoy this issue that much. It kind of seemed very... It was kind of boring to me. I don't know, maybe I was just tired when I was reading it, but I don't know. Having Batwoman's dad be the villain in the end of the issue seemed kind of like an obvious thing to do. I kind of was hoping for a little bit more of a more creative villain, I guess, behind these bad men or whatever you could call them.
Yeah, but didn't we actually find that out last issue? He showed up right before they escaped through the mud ball. So we already knew he was the big bad.
Well, maybe I guess I missed that. But I don't know. I'm still going to keep reading, but I wasn't a huge fan of this issue. Wasn't anything too great about it to me. It was kind of cool to see him, see all the Batwoman and all the guys come in at the end and come and help Batman out. But I guess that I did like the part where they were going through Batman's utility belt. I thought that was pretty funny.
It's funny how we had a lot. You know, the three of us. Let's be honest, we have pretty similar tastes when it comes to books, but. It's interesting when sometimes our opinions differ so greatly on the same books, because it seems like the majority of the time we agree. So when we don't, it really kind of stands out to me in my mind. What did you think, Manny?
I really liked the issue. The one thing that stood out to me is these people who have been surveilling Batman, Batwoman, well, the entire team. They really, the whole time, really seem overconfident that oh, they got this. They know their every move. They, you know, they're at every second that you're in here, we're learning about you. We know your tricks, this isn't this, but not even with their overconfidence and with the way they had everything lined up, I not once felt like it was gonna that Batman wasn't gonna get out of it one way or another. I thought it was really clever how they played Batman's towel. How if they were to try to take it off the wrong way, it could completely correct me if I'm wrong, like destroy their servers and all their information, and they didn't want to risk that. So that's the reason they didn't unmask him. I thought that was good that they included that, because sometimes when they kidnap Batman, that's one of my first questions always is why didn't they just unmask him then? They had him tied up, but they had a specific reason. That was a little cliche to have the boy genius, the one leading the charge. But I guess that can lead to an interesting confrontation with Robin, with Red Robin. So I do look forward to that. I find it interesting. Not that it's a little hard to believe that they picked up all that knowledge just from watching Batman, because I mean he did have extensive training around the world for a long time. But overall, I thought it was a pretty well done issue. I would have liked to seen a little bit more on how Red Robin and the rest of the team were able to get in, because it for all of their security and all of their tech and how much knowledge they have on the group, I would have thought that it would have been a little bit more difficult to get into their hideout. So I think that would have been a fun part of an issue to kind of explore how they got in. So far I'm really enjoying Detective.
What about the art?
The art, I like the art. It's done really well. That's Finch, right?
No, it's Alvaro Martinez. Finch is on Batman.
Oh, I'm confusing it. I'm sorry. No issues with the art.
I just wonder if, as far as security of their base, the cave, as they call it, if there really isn't necessarily that much outer security, because supposedly it's a secret and nobody knows where it is.
You know, oh, yeah, maybe that's why.
Because, you know, Tim mentions that, you know, he was able to find it when they were trying to hack into him. I enjoyed the issue as well. The art, as Jaden mentioned, of R. Martinez, it's really good. He's really hitting his stride. I love the layouts. They're really strong. He's got quite a few pages there where, you know, there's a character in the foreground off to the side, and the panels are kind of laid out around him. It's really a great way to kind of highlight who the stars of the book are. I particularly love the two pages. I don't have page numbers because it's preview, but there's one page where they're in the like little subway hub or whatever it is where Dick's or not Dick, but Tim tells them that he knows where the villains are. And then the next page is Batman checking out all the computer tech at the boy genius's desk. And if you notice in the background, this kid is so obsessed with Batman. He's got a Batman background on one laptop. And did you notice the Dark Knight Returns poster hanging on the side of the cubicle?
You know what? I did not.
That's pretty cool. I mean, it's right there where you can see it. See it, Jaden?
Yeah, I see it.
So that's pretty cool. But I have to say my favorite sequence, well, I love the cover too. The cover is just awesome. But I also enjoyed when they're going through the utility belt. But then just the way Batman escapes, it's just, like you said, Manny, I mean, they're awfully confident. You would think if they've been watching Batman this long, they would know better. Like, I would think they would just knock him out. Like, okay, oh, he's got something in his tooth. Okay, well, flood the chamber he's holding, or that he's in, with that's holding him, you know, with gas, and then go in and remove the tooth. But obviously they didn't do that. I do agree.
Yeah, it was interesting. They were trying to, but he kept waking up. Somebody commented that, hey, we need to raise the dose
because
he's up again.
So, yeah, that was interesting. I do agree with Jaden as far as who the villain is. You know, that's how I felt last time when we first found out who it was. I was kind of like, really?
Yeah.
So, with that. But, you know, we did get to see the team in action just a little tiny bit. They're kind of their dynamic with how it's going to work. So looking forward to seeing more. I really feel like this issue kind of really kicked it into gear, though. Like, they, you know, they took the fight to the bad guys rather than playing it safe. Like, Batwoman, initially, that was her initial instinct. You know, we've seen before they've been training and they've wanted to get out and actually do something. Batman himself wasn't sure that they were ready. Batwoman kind of had a reservation as well, but it seems like we're finally going to get some action with the team going forward. And considering how little of Batman we had in the last issue, I was happy to see how much he was in the pages of this issue. I mean, last issue, I don't even know that he showed up except kind of when they were watching him being taken. His capture and everything had kind of happened off panel. So, I mean, it is the Batman team book, but we went to the Batman panel at San Diego, and James Tynan was talking about how he really wants to use the pages of the book to showcase some of the other characters in the Batman family rather than just Batman himself. So, all in all, a really strong issue. I feel like Detective's really kicking into high gear now. Next up, we have Flash number 3. Written by Joshua Williamson. The art is by Carmine. See if I can get his name right this time. DiGiandomenico. Colors are by Ivan Placencia. Much like Detective, this one's really kicking into high gear. We saw at the end of last issue that the Speed Force storm hit, and a lot of people in Central City got powers, and we're seeing the ramifications of that now. So I feel like this is like the first couple issues were set up, getting the Flash, you know, establishing the status quo, getting the Flash where he needed to be in order for the real main story to start, and this is where it kicks off. So really, really, a really, really good issue. I guess you were right and I was wrong, Manny, as far as Godspeed being August Hart. Clearly it's not. I talked to Joshua Williamson at San Diego, mentioned to him that I really enjoyed this issue. Actually, the first day I saw him, I'd only read like maybe the first two or three pages. I was actually reading it when I was in line to talk to him. And then he's like, okay, we'll finish reading it. You know, and I just said hi real quick. He's all, okay, I'll, you know, finish reading it and then talk to me about it tomorrow. So I did. And, you know, we talked about how he kind of felt the same way. It took a couple issues to really get going. Not necessarily by his own fault, because he had to, of course, service the DC Rebirth issues. You know, the story that Geoff Johns is telling, that took up a few pages in his initial story or whatever. So, you know, no fault of his own, but it does slow down, you know, how fast he can tell the story. So the art, I'm not a huge fan of this guy's art. Some panels it seems to work well. Other panels, not so much. I do feel like the story itself, Williamson really gets Barry Allen. I love the way he writes Barry as far as the sense of right and wrong really comes across. Barry's clear sense and clear It's clear there are lines in the sand. And the other speedsters he meets, it all seems realistic, you know, in a Flash world. You know, it's a comic and these are fantastical ideas, I understand that, but it kind of rings true that these kind of things would go down if people, just everyday Joes, got superpowers. So Flash is definitely in good hands. Like I said, if I had any drawback or anything negative to say, it's just the art. I'm just not sure if I'm ever going to care for this guy's art. It's just not my particular cup of tea. The colors are done very well, though, and I think that saves it on some levels. But I don't know. I mean, even the layouts themselves seem kind of boring to me. I guess, you know, I'm such a huge Brett Booth fan. I've gone on record many times as saying I think he's got the best layouts in comics. So this Dijon Domenico has a very tough act to follow. Yeah, in my eyes. And I mean, there's probably no way he could live up to my expectations when he's following Brett Booth on a book. So, but I'm definitely still in on Flash. Did you get a chance to read this one, Jaden?
Yes, I did.
What are your thoughts?
Overall, I like the idea and the concept of the story that they're doing, but to me it kind of seems like far-fetched inside of the Flash world that they could have this many people drawing on the Speed Force and still have, like, the Flash be as powerful as he is. Like, I see that it's mentioned at one point in the issue that he feels that he's slower because there's so many people pulling on off the Speed Force. But maybe it's just because I watched the show and they made a big deal about it in the show, but I feel like anything that I've seen where one other person is pulling off the Speed Force, it like actually makes a big difference with how fast Barry can go. And I kind of am questioning how they can have all of these people with the Speed Force and have him still be somewhat like faster than most of them. Might just be a nitpick for me, but that's what I was thinking most of this issue. I mean, it's a cool concept. I feel like they haven't done anything really like this, like the Speed Force Storm. It's cool that a bunch of people are getting these powers, but I'm interested to see why Godspeed, for some reason, can draw on the Speed Force more than some of the other people. And much like you, I don't care for the art either. I could see where it can work in some panels, but I don't know. I'm not a big fan of the thick lines.
I wonder if Godspeed is somebody who's had Speed Force powers before.
Yeah.
Because he was able to vibrate through walls, which is, you know, more of an advanced, kind of an advanced technique. And so then you wonder, is he, like you said, you know, this is not the show. This is not the TV show. Clearly, it's going to be different.
Yeah.
But it is mentioned that, you know, the Speed Force is being shared out among more people. So, yeah, even Barry himself feels slower. So, is that why Godspeed's going to go around killing these speedsters? Because he wants to be faster? And the fewer people that are drawing on it, you know, the better? Also, what's up? Well, why did the Black Hole organization make this happen in the first place? So yeah, there's still a lot more questions than there are answers. So what were your thoughts, Manny?
Like you guys, I'm not a big fan of the artwork. I find it kind of distracting, and I don't know, just the concept seems pretty cool about a lot of people getting super speed, but at the same time, kind of like Jaden says, even in a Flash world, it seems kind of a little far out there. But I think what's going to really define the book for me is going to be when they reveal, hopefully sooner rather than later, a little bit more about Godspeed, who he is, how he got his powers. Did he have his powers before the storm? Is this all his doing so that he can siphon Speed Force off of people or what. So that to me is going to make a huge difference, just because with Barry and his partner stopping crime side by side, it's going to get pretty old pretty quick. So it's really going to just depend on how they deliver that the story with Godspeed, because I am really interested in it. I like his look. I thought his look was pretty good, but I just really need to a little bit more before I can judge it.
I wonder, as far as the artwork goes, if it was all his idea, Dijon Domenico's idea, to have the lightning whenever they're using Barry's using the Speed Force, even when he's not using the Speed Force, even when he's just kind of standing there, he's got the lightning coming around. And you know, if any of you saw the Justice League trailer, you know, as soon as Ezra Miller makes any move to use his powers in there, just see the lightning crackling around him. But even you know, even when Barry's standing still, he's got the lightning coming off him, and just I don't care for that. So anyway, on to the next book, Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps number one. This is one of the ones that you weren't able to get to, right, Jaden?
I wasn't able to get this one.
And Manny, did you finish it?
Yeah, I finished it.
Okay, what did you think?
I like it. I like where it's headed. I find it really interesting that, correct me if I'm wrong, but pretty much Sinestro killed Parallax.
I'm not sure if he killed him, if he reabsorbed him, or if he stowed him in a battery and used the battery to recharge himself.
Something like that. Whatever he did, he pretty much like rejuvenated himself, and it looks like Davis is them patrolling the universe. Is that something that was established in Sinestro, or is that something that they just kind of brought up now?
No, I don't know. It was established in Sinestro.
Oh, it is? Okay, so they've taken over pretty much for the Green Lanterns and been patrolling the universe using fear?
Say that again?
So they've been patrolling the universe using fear?
Yes. They have taken it upon themselves. That was kind of the whole point of that Sinestro series, was to show what Sinestro was going to do when the Green Lantern Corps was gone.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, then that answers my question. So it's a pretty cool setup issue, because we have Hal Jordan. They find Hal Jordan, and they're kind of confused as to, you know, how he's still alive. And then at the end of the issue, we see that they made it back home. I'm not sure how, but it looks like the Corps has made it back. So it's gonna lead to a really cool confrontation next issue. So it was more of a setup issue, but and also it looks like there may be a little bit of a power struggle within the Sinestro Corps. But I guess with Sinestro now being a little bit more rejuvenated, that may stop. I liked it, and I like where it's headed. So I'm still in on Hal Jordan.
What about the art?
I like the art. I like my favorite panel has to be when Sinestro kind of shows up rejuvenated. It's like, I think it was, I don't have it in front of me. It's I think it's a two-page where he's kind of like flying up, and he has all of the like the rest of the Yellow Lanterns underneath, and it's like a full body shot of him. I thought that was done really, really well. And then there's also one later with Hal Jordan, which I really liked. So overall, it's a solid book, writing and artwork. I really like the colors in it too.
Yeah, I should mention the writer is Robert Venditti, penciler is Rafa Sandoval, and the inker is Jordi Tarragona, I'm sorry, that's the inker. The inker is Jordi Tarragona. The colorist is Tameu Morey. I felt like this was a really cool issue. You know, we saw Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps Rebirth was really kind of a recap issue with just a couple little sprinkles of new things for longtime readers. And those things were big, even though for a new reader, you might not necessarily realize like what a big deal it is for Hal Jordan to forge his own ring. So had a really interesting talk with Robert Venditti at San Diego Comic-Con. So be sure to listen to that interview if you're a huge Green Lantern fan. He talks about his process of getting that approved for Hal Jordan to be able to forge his own ring. I thought the art was, like Manny said, was outstanding. Cool layouts. I did think that Saranek looked kind of strange. He draws her quite a bit different than Brad Walker did. I'm used to seeing Brad Walker's version of her. But yeah, Sinestro, once he's all charged up, I mean, he does a good job of making him look old and feeble, and then he does an excellent job of you know, making him look foreboding, and really has a pretty strong, no pun intended, but a Mark Strong look, you know, from like the Green Lantern movie. And he's got that streak in his hair now, which maybe kind of shows what he's been through. Yeah, and as far as the Green Lantern's returning, you know, I never did finish reading Edge of Oblivion, so I'm not sure if that explains why or how they came back. But there's not a lot of them. You know, it's mentioned... Kilowog mentioned the few Lanterns we got left are banged up, something awful, so clearly not everybody survived. So it looks like maybe the next arc after dealing with Sinestro, they're going to have to be rebuilding the core. So there's a lot of questions to be answered, that's for sure. You know, Sinestro's in a place he's never been before, and he mentions that. You know, he says, the Sinestro Corps has instilled order throughout the universe. Now comes the far more difficult endeavor, keeping order. So yeah, again, Venditti talks about this in the interview, that Sinestro's finally gotten what he always wanted, but in a way he's more vulnerable than ever because now he has something to lose. And you can kind of flip that around and say that Hal Jordan is in a position of strength because he doesn't have anything to lose. As far as he knows, he's the last Green Lantern left, so he might as well let it all hang out, because, you know, he's been backed into a corner, and we all know how dangerous that can be. So, really great start to the issue. If I had anything to nitpick about it, it would be that I wouldn't mind seeing a different villain than Sinestro. I mean, it makes sense because of the status quo of what's going on right now. And what's been happening currently in the Green Lantern books. But I don't know. I'm barely starting to get Sinestro'd out. You know, maybe, which is kind of weird because I enjoyed the Sinestro book so much. So I don't know. I guess we'll see. And certainly Venditti, he's been on Green Lantern for a while now. He's introduced plenty of new concepts and new villains. So it's not like he's gone to the well against Sinestro so many times. So I don't know why I just feel that way. But like I said, probably from reading the Sinestro title so closely. And I don't know. I just feel like Sinestro's he's one of my favorite comic book villains of all time. But I think he can start to get a little two-dimensional when he's used too much. So... I'll be ready for him to take a break from Sinestro for a while after this arc is over. Okay, moving on to the next book, and that would be Nightwing number 1. I know this is the one you missed, Manny, so why don't you go first, Jaden? Well, let me real quick. Nightwing number 1, written by Tim Seeley. The artist was Javier Fernandez, and we had Chris Sotomayor on colors.
I didn't really care for the art in this book. It was all right. It wasn't bad. There was nothing really that special about it. I felt like this is kind of rehashing of Rebirth. There's a lot of introductory parts of it. I kind of was hoping that, I wasn't hoping, but I wasn't really expecting as much introductory information as they gave because of Rebirth, but it was pretty good. It's interesting. I liked the fact that he is kind of working undercover again, like not in Grayson as Nightwing with the Parliament of the Owls. I thought that was an interesting thing. I liked the dynamic between him and Batman. Batman told him basically that he can't help him with every problem that he needs help with. He trusts him at this point to make his own decisions, and that he has proven himself that he can. He has proven that he can make good decisions on his own. So Batman basically just tells him to do it on his own. And I also liked the whole scene with Batgirl on top of the bridge. I don't know. I really like this issue. It was a good issue. Interested in this partner that he has. He's got kind of a weird costume, but I definitely want to see where this is going to go. It's cool to see Nightwing back in his blue and black costume also. It wasn't that I wasn't a fan of the red and black. I feel like this is what he should be. This is what he should look like.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with everything you said. Not a huge fan of the art. It's just not as clean as I would hope it to be. Not really sure what the opening sequence is all about.
Yeah, it was very confusing.
Yeah, a little out of place there, so I'm not sure what's up with that. But it's clear from the dialogue and the narrative of the story with the narrative boxes that Tim Seeley totally gets Dick Grayson. I love the idea of the Parliament of the Owls, the fact that they're wearing black masks now to show that they're kind of in hiding. Like you, love the dynamic of Batman telling Dick that, hey, I'm happy to, you know, bankroll your missions, but this isn't Batman Incorporated. You know, you have your own experiences, you went your own way, and I'm not your teacher anymore. You need to make your own decisions. So that was pretty cool. It was also cool to see Batgirl show up. I like the idea of Dick Grayson and Batgirl together, but at the same time, I have fond memories of him and Starfire in the classic Teen Titans by Wolfman and Perez. So not sure how that's all going to shake out. But yeah, all in all, a pretty strong issue. So I guess we'll see where it goes. The fight itself at the end was pretty cool. So yeah, I mean, I'm a fan of Dick Grayson. I'm definitely in on Nightwing.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you said, the art isn't... I mean, it's not terrible. I feel like the layouts are pretty good. I'm not really sure I can put my finger on what it is about it that I don't care for. I guess he just looks a little... I mean, Dick looks a little too scrawny to me. A little too elongated.
Yeah, he looks a little skinny.
And actually, I don't know that I care for the colors in this book that much. Everything seems very purplish to me. So, I don't know. Maybe that's a nitpick. Okay, up next we have Red Hood and the Outlaws Rebirth number 1. This book was written by Scott Lobdell. The artist was Dexter Soy. And colors by Veronica Gandini. You go first, Manny. What'd you think of this one?
You know what? I completely missed this one.
What?
Yeah, I didn't even notice it was on the list.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
Yeah, right now when you're reading it off, I was like, wait, what? So I'm going to have to figure this.
All right, Jaden. I know you didn't miss this one. Being the big Red Hood.
No, this is my favorite issue of the week, I think. I mean, Nightwing is pretty close, but I think this was my favorite one overall.
All right, how come?
I'm a big fan. I mean, it showed the kind of the beginning of Jason Todd becoming Robin, and I think that it was pretty cool. This whole beginning sequence, I think we saw a preview of it pretty... I don't remember when we saw a preview of it, but it was sometime recently.
Yeah, it was probably about a month ago, maybe a little less, maybe a little more, but somewhere around there.
Seeing Jason Todd and Batman together when before he becomes Red Hood, I did think it was kind of, weird that he was talking to Batman like more of an equals, like they were kind of just like on bad terms. Whereas, like, in the New 52, they were, like, Red Hood didn't want anything to do with Batman. So it's a different type of dynamic between them. I think it'll be a lot better in the long run, because I felt like any time that there was a Bat tie-in with Red Hood in the DC in the DC New 52, it was out of place, because I would never think that version of Red Hood would ever help Batman out.
Well, actually, as the New 52 went on with the weekly books, he showed up both in Batman Eternal and Batman and Robin Eternal, and started, you know, he kind of got over his initial, yeah, I don't want anything to do with Batman. That was kind of a progression as he tried to be more of a hero rather than an anti-hero. But yeah, I do agree with you that this dynamic their relationship is definitely evolving. What do you think?
And I'm kind of scared, like, I don't know. To me, Red Hood, in my head, he's not a hero. He is that anti-hero that does good things, but goes about them a different way. Like, he isn't afraid to kill people, which, I mean, Batman says in this issue, I'll let you do what you do, but as soon as if you kill anybody, you get one strike and you're out in my city. So I need to read more to find out, but I actually really liked the art in this book. It's good writing. I mean, Scott Lobdell, I think he knows Red Hood pretty good. And I think it's really cool that he's trying to act like he's a bad guy, basically. He's trying to be, like, basically do what Batman can't do in Gotham, which I think is cool. So I'm excited for more Red Hood and the Outlaws. I'm curious to see who the Outlaws exactly are.
Well, we know who they are. They're Artemis and Bizarro.
Oh, okay. Well, it's gonna be interesting seeing them pull them in, I guess.
Yeah, I agree with you. This book was amazing. I think Scott Lobdell has a great handle on Red Hood. For me, I just need Red Hood. I've never been a fan of Artemis, and Bizarro, in the right context, can be okay, but seeing him in a monthly book, I have a feeling I might get real tired of Bizarro speak real fast.
Yeah.
So I'd be happy if this book was just Red Hood and forget about any outlaws. That being said, I've talked to Scott Lobdell about what his ideas are for the book, and so I think that can work well, especially with the dynamic that he set up here. It's kind of clear from the things that Jason Todd was saying that he wants to be on his own. He wants to do things his own way. He's not looking for a team. He's not looking to be part of a program or work with anyone else. He just wants to, like Jaden said, do what Batman can't do and do it his own way. As far as him killing, like I said, we've seen a character progression over the last couple of years of the DCU, particularly with his feelings for Barbara Gordon. If it's not only his feelings for her, that's not the only reason, but just for himself, because he felt like he was becoming too violent and losing himself. He doesn't want to kill anymore. But that doesn't mean it's going to take much to push him back over the edge. And so I like that about him. And I totally agree with you, Jaden, that that's the interesting thing about him, is that he'll cross lines that supposed other superheroes won't. He definitely doesn't consider himself a hero. He's a guy who just does what he needs to do to get the job done. As far as the art goes, I thought for the most part it was done pretty well. I'm not really familiar with Dexter Soy. I love the colors, especially the backgrounds in the flashbacks. It's almost like sepia tone. Also, his splash pages are done really well. If the art falls down anywhere for me, it's in the character moments. Just where, you know, like I didn't particularly find the scenes where Bruce and Jason are talking to be that compelling. I mean, the layouts are okay, but you know, those are hard scenes to make visually interesting, and it takes a real master of comic art, usually with a lot of years of experience, in order to do that. So maybe Dexter will get there someday, but he's not there yet for me. But all in all, really, really strong issue. Love the cover, which was by Giuseppe Camincola, Cam Smith, and Dean White. And again, this is one of those books where you don't need to be a fan of Red Hood or know his history in order to pick up this book and really enjoy it and be on board and all completely caught up. It teaches you everything you need to know about Red Hood and Jason Todd's relationship with Batman. So really cool. And did you notice, Jaden, in the covers on the scopes, it actually, you can see the Outlaws.
I didn't really look that hard at it.
You'll see the reflection of both Bizarro and Artemis.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, love the cover. Really, really good issue. Next up, we have Titans number one. Can I just say that Brett Booth is an amazing artist? I don't understand what people... I mean, I know people... I personally know people who do not... Who not only like are indifferent about his art, but actively dislike his art. And I'm like... I always find myself thinking, then you don't like comics, man. Because this is just... This is superhero art at its finest. Amazing, amazing layouts. Great rendering. The colors are handled beautifully. You know, it's... You know, when they were on The Flash, I called them the Dream Team, and they continue to be. Brett Booth, penciler, Norm Ratman, inker, and Andrew Dollhouse on colors. Just amazing. And we have Dan Abnett as the writer. So, yeah, I loved this issue. Art-wise, it was absolutely amazing. If there was any weak part of the story, kind of felt like... I don't know, the narrative just didn't really make a whole lot of sense to me. As far as, okay, these people are going to go out and try to find stuff, and Lilith is going to stay back and just kind of probe Wally's mind. I don't know. It just felt a little uneven to me. But it definitely seems like Titans is going to be the title to read if you want to know what's going on as far as the overall continuing story with the Watchmen and everything that was revealed in the DC Universe Rebirth number one by Geoff Johns. So yeah, really, really, really great issue. I love Wally's new costume. I love the villain that shows up at the end. I'm not going to say who it is because I want you to go out and buy the book for yourself, but it's a classic DC villain that I was happy to see the return of. And I also love Donna Troy's costume. I don't know that we've ever seen her in a costume like this before. But she looks awesome. And did you see that variant cover, Manny, from Titans Rebirth that basically is just a close-up of Donna Troy?
She's yes. Like,
okay, so Jaden and I are standing there talking to Todd Nock, and there was a couple people standing at the booth right next to Todd, which was Norm Ratman.
Of course, their booths are always together.
Yeah, always. So they were talking for a long time. They were trying to get a hold of Brett about something. You know, I wasn't really paying that much attention. It wasn't eavesdropping because we're talking to Todd. And we went over to talk to Norm when one of the guy went away and the girl was still there. And then just from standing there, kind of came to understand that they were trying to get a hold of Brett to see how he wanted this woman to pay for some original art she was buying. You know, because PayPal, if she PayPal'd it, there'd be, you know, fees, and he, you know, so anyway, so they can't get a hold of Brett, so eventually Norm just says, okay, well, you're good, I know you're good for it, I'll just give it to you now. You can make the payment arrangements later. She's like, okay, that's fine. And so he lifts the page up from under the table, and it's the original art for that cover.
What?
Yeah, dude. My jaw just about hit the floor. I just looked at Jaden, and he looked at me. Jaden was like, oh, that's so awesome. I told Jaden, I was like, we should follow her and roll her, dude, for her original. Hey. She had two other pages, too.
What?
And, yeah, she had the original art. And so I told her, I was like, I would, like, not have that on top. You know, so she's like, yeah, you're right. She put it between the other two pages. But yeah, so she walked away, and I told Norma, I was like, man, that is like an iconic piece of art. I mean, it's so good. It wasn't just used as the variant cover for Titans. I've seen it all over the place for promo art, and, you know, for the Titans.
No, it's really good.
Yeah, it's just so, so good. And Norma was like, yeah, it's a great piece. And you know, clearly she was going to pay a pretty penny for it. And he's like, yeah, and I don't see a dime of it. So, yeah, I don't know who she is, man, but she must have a pretty impressive collection of original art, because she had that cover. So, yeah, I loved it. I'm definitely in on Titans. It's really, really good. What's your take, Jaden?
I thought it was cool. I think this issue is a lot more about the dynamic between all the people and the Titans, than, like, actually moving the story forward. I'm not familiar with the villain who shows up at the end. I'm not so sure if I'm going to like him or not.
Classic Flash villain.
I'm a big fan of Teen Titans, and seeing that they're not even the Teen Titans anymore, they're just, like, regular Titans. They're all grown up and, like, actual superheroes on their own. It's going to be cool seeing them work together. It's kind of like a mini Justice League almost.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
I'm going to keep reading. I mean, Brett Booth's art's amazing. Justice League wasn't anything great, but it was good enough, I think, to keep me interested. It was number one, so I don't expect a lot of progression, but I think I'm going to have to keep checking out. I love the costumes. Like, I think everybody has a new costume, right? Well, except for Nightwing, it's an old costume, but I think everybody's costume is a little bit different than usual.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Manny, you're up. What'd you think?
I really enjoyed the issue. The only part that I kind of was like, speeded up already a little bit, was in the beginning where they went back, and it was like, they kind of recapped, but they already recapped in two other issues. But other than that, I kind of like Jaden, I felt like they were just kind of getting the band back together, kind of getting situated. And with what you said, and what I was going to say also, is that Donna, the way they did Donna Troy on a couple of those panels, man, I loved it. That was one of my favorite parts of the book. I think, even yeah, from the beginning when they did the variant cover, I've loved that cover. But and now seeing her in the book, it's just so awesome. And then Wally's costume was done really well. I was very happy to see a different villain show up. You know, because a lot of nothing wrong with it. A lot of the books that we were getting, they have these iconic villains that we're used to seeing. Green Lantern has Sinestro, Superman. Action Comics has Doomsday for a couple of issues. Aquaman has had Black Manta. So it was nice to see somebody kind of out of the blue for Titans. I really enjoyed it, and I'm really looking forward to the next issue, because we're going to get a whole lot more team interaction.
Yeah, for sure. All right, and the last book we're going to talk about is Wonder Woman number 3, written by Greg Rucka. The art in this issue is Liam Sharp, and the colors are by Laura Martin. You go first, Manny, because this is one that you didn't get to, right, Jaden?
Yeah, I didn't get to this one.
All right, go ahead, Manny.
I'm not sure what I was going to get out of this issue. Very excited when I read the first one. Loved the artwork of the first one. Picked this one up. This was actually... so what I did is... which book am I going to read first? Which is the one I'm going to be more excited about. Turns out that it was Wonder Woman. That's the first one I decided to read. With that being said, I love this issue. The artwork, it's... As I was reading it, I found myself having to pause a lot and just kind of gaze at the way Liam Sharp draws Cheetah is like nothing I've ever seen before. And then there's something about the way that he conveys emotion on their faces that it's kind of a little bit more than comic book art. Not to say anything bad about comic book art, but it just looks a little bit more. I don't know what the word is. A little bit more artistic. It's so good. It was just so good to look at. I mean, for me personally, I like the artwork enough where it was distracting me from the actual story. But as far as the story, besides that fact that our main villain's name is so ridiculous to pronounce, for me at least, I thought it was really cool. There was just so much emotion in that issue between Wonder Woman and Cheetah, and you can really see it. And it's setting up to be quite the story. I felt like Steve Trevor's part in it. It didn't really. Sometimes it becomes kind of annoying when you have the side something that's going to come together later, but. I thought they did that well, handled it okay. But man, that interaction between Cheetah and Wonder Woman, that it made that issue fantastic.
I didn't think that Liam Sharp's art could get any better after the first issue. I said at the time that we reviewed it that I felt like it wasn't just comic art, it was art. It was like legit fine art. And man, he upped his game like immensely in this issue. It just blew me away. The art was so good. I totally agree with you on the way he draws the cheetah. I don't know if you saw, Manny, but I won a cheetah sketch from Liam Sharp at San Diego Comic-Con.
Did you really? No, I did not see that.
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, we were walking up back to the booth, the DC booth. I don't even know where we were coming from, and he's almost finished with it, and I took one look at it up on the screen, because, you know, he was doing one of the DC Art Academies, and I told Jay, and I go, man, I want that. And they usually ask trivia questions about this or that, first appearance and such, so I didn't know the first appearance of Cheetah off the top of my head, so I looked it up on my phone. That's Wonder Woman 6, by the way, if anybody's wondering.
Wonder Woman 6.
And, so, you know, I knew her name, I knew the name of the character, I knew what her profession was before she became the cheetah, so I figured, you know, let's say I ask something really obscure, you know, probably okay, you know, trying to decide what, you know, trying to guess what they might ask. And sure enough, you know, Liam finished up a few minutes later, and he asked what her profession was before she became the cheetah, and I, you know, boom, I was on it, archaeologist, and, you know, nobody else even, you know, it wasn't like I was racing against anybody. There are a few other times, like one time in particular, I said the answer first, and then the guy in front of me said it after I said it. I'm 100% sure I said it first, and he heard me and, you know, repeated it, and they gave it to him. And I feel like sometimes, I don't know, they want to spread the love around, so I can respect that. But anyway, the cheetah piece I got is amazing. It's so, so, so good. I mean, it's nothing compared to the art in this issue. You know, Liam's art with Laura Martin's colors on top is just, I mean, absolutely gorgeous. I mean, he gives so much emotion in Cheetah's face sometimes. You're just like,
mm-hmm.
It's just amazing, amazing, amazing work. Advanced the story along pretty well, I thought. The pages with Steve Trevor and his unit are very well done. You know, again, I'll go back to the colors by Laura Martin. Like, there's the page where the unit goes off, and, you know, the top half of the page is the silhouette of their Humvee, I guess it is, against this incredible sky. And then there's a six-panel grid showing their faces on the bottom. Stunning. The next page with the trees in the mist. Again, you know, fine art. You know, Wonder Woman, as high as my expectations were, this creative team just continually meets and exceeds those expectations. I really like the use of the nine-panel grid that Liam used on some pages. For me, this is the book of the week. Just purely based on the art alone, I couldn't possibly pick another book. I mean, there were a lot of strong books this week, but for me, Liam Sharp's art, along with Laura Martin's colors, just pushed this book ahead. I can't help but pick it. And I think I've picked every issue of Wonder Woman when it's come out as book of the week. Maybe not two, can't remember, but yeah. Liam Sharp's on the book, man. I just can't help but pick it as book of the week. It just completely blew me away. I mean, the Flash story is cool. Titans is, you know, Brett Booth. So yeah, that's great. Loved Red Hood. That might be my second choice, my runner up, because like Jaden said, it showed the dynamic in the relationship between Jason Todd and Batman. Great way to recap with the flashbacks. The art was done well. Colors done well. But it just couldn't edge out Wonder Woman for me. And also, Detective was my favorite issue of Detective since Rebirth started. I got to go with Wonder Woman for my book of the week.
Yeah, I'll second that, definitely.
And Jaden goes with Red Hood and the Outlaws.
Yep.
But he didn't read Wonder Woman. So
maybe. No, he would pick Red Hood and the Outlaws regardless.
Yeah. Red Hood is his favorite character, so that's understood. All right, everybody, that's going to wrap up our DC Rebirth Week 8 recaps. And I want to apologize to everyone if there's any kind of technical difficulties or problems with the sound. We had a lot of trouble with Skype tonight. It just didn't seem to want to work properly. And then we had the Skype call drop a couple times, so it was a real struggle to get the spotlight done. But we were able to finish it. And again, I just apologize if there's any trouble with sound quality or such. So thanks for understanding, everybody.